Welcome back to the Asia-Pacific Perspective, and as I hope you know by now, this is that monthly, or usually monthly, series where we talk about all of the news from the Asia-Pacific region with Brock West of APPerspective.net. Brock, thank you for joining us again.
James, always a pleasure to be back for our somewhat regularly irregular video series that I really enjoy doing with you now. I will just say it is the end of January 2016, so we've been at it on and off for about 2 years now, so how time flies. But I think, unfortunately, as we're going to see in this episode, the more things kind of are staying the same. But for this episode, James, we're going to try something a little different, and it's going to try and blast through as many Asia-Pacific headlines as we can, and what I'm sure will be a futile attempt to try and cover all of the headlines and events that have happened over the last month here in the Asia-Pacific. So let's start at least with China, James, as they've been the ones making a few headlines around not only the Asia-Pacific but the world lately. With the headline reading, Chinese President's Tour of the Greater Middle East, this one coming from the New Eastern Outlook. From January 19 to January 22, Chinese President Xi Jinping visited the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Iran. That is, the three leading countries in the Greater Middle East. It was the first visit of the leader of one of the major world powers to the extremely important and troubled region since his coming to power in early 2013. During the meeting, Xi Jinping and King Salman Al Saud announced the intention of the China and Cooperation Council of six Gulf Arab countries to conclude an agreement in 2016 in order to establish a free trade zone. And I also recommend checking out, James, an article written by Eric Dreister up there at Sputnik News with the headline reading, Challenging China as a Balance Weight of the Asia-Pacific. Quickly, before I throw it back to you, James, I'll go through a couple more China-related headlines. China's ICBC bank launches second branch in Belgium. The Chinese environmental problems that are taking a serious turn for the worse. I think we've all seen the pictures come through of that. And finally, an interesting one from Zero Hedge. China says George Soros, quote, hasn't done his homework and may be partially blind. Which is a very interesting read at the least. So, James, my question to you is, what's China up to here in the Middle East? Is this more of the 2D chessboard move, as we've spoken about time and time again? Or is there something more strategic that we're being led not to see, perhaps? I mean, for me, that those free trade zones that always seem to be the quiet undertones of these big meetings between global superpowers and global players.
Yeah. Well, I think this is significant. I think this tour is significant in what it represents, and at least starting the Chinese transition from merely economic power to geopolitical power. And I think this is what that thin edge of the wedge looks like. I think it's important to keep in mind that although there is the 2D chess game and the 3D chess game when it comes to geopolitics, as we've talked about before, the 3D chess game doesn't mean that there isn't serious moves on the 2D chessboard. I mean, if you look at something like a World War I or World War II, huge moves on the 2D chessboard, even as there was, of course, 3D manipulations going on at the same time. So I think we are seeing a transition going on right now. And of course, it's framed in the terms of Chinese influence over the region versus U.S. NATO bloc influence over the region and that rivalry, which, of course, is part of the main 2D narrative. But I think there's another interesting narrative going on, which is China and Russia, who are not straightforward allies. Of course, they are together in Shanghai Cooperation Organization and other institutions like that, but they have separate foreign policy agendas. They're both vying for control over Central Asia and Eurasia. And I think this is part of that as well, because part of what China is doing right now is wooing some of these people, at least not away from Russia, but less so 100% with Russia on to the east and more so towards China. So I think there's some interesting rivalries and tensions that could be bringing this type of trip could bring about. So I'm very interested in that aspect of this, as well as, of course, as I'm sure all of the headlines are noting, the sort of the Chinese attempt to woo Saudi Arabia and others away from the U.S. umbrella. So there are some 2D chess moves that are happening right now that I think are significant. Is there a broader agenda here? I think the way I see it right now, it's just part of the framing of the narrative of the conflict. And I think this is just a step towards it. And this is just China becoming more of a geopolitical player internationally. And I think people are we're just being introduced to that concept right now.
And speaking of the Saudi family, James, we will have an interesting other article a little bit later in the episode, which is quite the read, to be honest. So speaking of regional and geopolitical players, James, and you mentioned the US-NATO bloc before, the US Pacific chief talks China and regional partnerships. This one coming from defensenews.com, basically. As always, every time around this time of year, you know, the US, the Pentagon and the defense chiefs start wagging their finger at China for increasing tensions, and absolutely China is guilty of that. But of course, there's these kind of furrowing of the brows and pointing of the fingers tend to happen around things such as Exercise Cope North 2016 begins in February, which is a massive drill, military, I think it's an Air Force military drill between Japan, China, Australia, I think probably South Korea as well, possibly the Philippines, Guam. So it's just always interesting to see how those things tend to coincide. Moving quickly here, James, to Australia, and please let me throw in my two cents for the War on Cash open source investigation that you've currently got happening right now at corporatereport.com. These are just a couple that I want to throw into the ring. Australian Green Senator Rachel Seward moves to block cashless welfare card trial. That one coming from abc.net.au. And one coming from Channel 9 News. Government reportedly considering expanding cashless welfare card to regional Australia if these trials prove successful. And of course, I'm sure in 5 or 10 years when you're welfare card will then sync up to your carbon rationing card, but in the meantime they'll waste hundreds of millions of dollars in the setting up of these systems. But of course, more importantly, it steers us just that one step closer to even more controlled, even more surveilled society. So James, I noticed there's a couple of Asia Pacific countries in that list you've compiled in the open source investigation. Are there any that surprised you or stood out to you?
I can't say I'm surprised by any of them at this point, if only actually maybe a bit surprised that it isn't as far advanced. Right now, it's still there are a lot of restrictions in Europe on cash transactions, and there's a lot of pushes towards more mobile payments in a lot of countries, but it's still in its infancy, but I think it's going to grow very quickly. So it's a bit disheartening that way. But I will say, for the to put in a good word for the Corbett Report community, in fact, we already had that cashless welfare system in the Australian section of the War on Cash article. So people, please do check out that article. We are still adding information from countries all around the world. If you have more information to add, please add it in the comment section, and we'll continue to expand it. I'm really keeping an eye on Japan, because Japan is still a very much cash-based society. But as I've always said, I think they're going to go straight from cash-based to card-based very quickly. Or if not card-based, probably contactless, smartphone, whatever, the most advanced. So I think they're probably going to make that kind of a turn, but I don't know when it's going to happen.
I tell you, it's going to be one hell of a job to replace all those vending machines with those.
They're already there, actually. They've already got smartphone payments that you can do. You just wave your smartphone. Yeah. Not a lot of people use them right now, but it's already there.
Yeah, I mean, I have to concur with that. Every single time I've come back from my trips to Japan, my suitcase or my bag or something is loaded up with 1 yen and 5 yen and 10 yen set pieces. So, yeah, it absolutely is still very cash based. So that is going to be really interesting. Considering, are they still the third? Technically, still the third most powerful or significant economy globally at the moment? Or?
Depending on the measure, but yes, by the most common measure, it's still the third largest economy.
Okay, cool. All right. Let's move to Myanmar, James. This one coming, I've got posted up to apperspective.net. As Myanmar enters a new era, of course, Washington and Beijing are vying for political and geopolitical influence. And then a couple of interesting contrasting articles as well. Outgoing Myanmar president pushes to expand an army-run ministry or government. That one coming from channelnewsasia.com. And coming from apdnews.com, the incoming leader Aung San Suu Kyi and her military chief discuss new Myanmar government formation. And unfortunately, I haven't been following the events in Myanmar as closely as I would have liked. But James, when you've got the military and an incoming party that are going to form a government in conjunction with each other, that's called a coup, right?
Last time I checked,
yeah.
And if you apply that word, what happened in Egypt? I mean, same thing, right?
Exactly right. Let's move to Malaysia, James, and something we've mentioned on a recent episode of APP that I just had to talk about is this ongoing saga called the 1MDB scandal in Malaysia that directly involved the Prime Minister there. This one coming from the Peninsula Qatar.com. quote, Malaysia's official explanation of the 681 million that ended up in Prime Minister Najib Razak's personal bank account was deemed to be an entirely proper gift from friends, which has triggered derision and fresh questions from a country already well used in allegations of graft. So, on Tuesday, Malaysia's Attorney General, who was appointed by the Prime Minister, it should be noted, shockingly cleared the Premier of any wrongdoing in a scandal that has gripped the nation, declaring that the money was a personal donation from none other than the Saudi royal family. There's those Saudis again. The announcement capped months of evasion by Najib on the source of the money and apparently laid to rest any threat of prosecution by Malaysian authorities. So all's well that ends well there, James. Case closed, and I can almost smell the corruption from here. So while this has all been going on, at the exact same time, the Malaysian public has still been protesting the TPP, that one coming from news.com.au. And speaking of the TPP, James, an article from the New Zealand Herald, which I came across, police door knock known activist ahead of proposed TPP protests. So sadly, it looks like our Kiwi friends might be guilty of some thought crime there, James. So finally, let's just quickly blast through some headlines from your own Fukushima update. Firstly, Japan requests Singapore to review restriction on food imports from Fukushima. And Fukushima fishermen to expand operation of the crippled nuclear plant, as apparently radioactive levels of the water that has been continually leaking for almost the last 5 years now, apparently the levels are getting lower and lower and lower. But there should always be the caveat that anything from TEPCO should be taken with a giant grain of salt, as they have fudged the numbers many, many times in the past, as we have covered. And in the seemingly unrelated but interesting, virtual reality to be used to help decommission the Fukushima plant, as Toshiba unveiled this new fandangled remote-controlled robot that can apparently handle all the high levels of radioactivity that are still encased in two or three of the reactors at the plant. And while all this is happening, James, Toshiba to offload chip business in wake of a $1.3 billion accounting scandal. And I've always been meaning to ask you, James, if you felt there was any difference between giant American multinationals and giant Japanese multinationals, but I guess that that headline answers that question for me.
Well, the only difference I would say is that the Japanese system comes more from the family clan system, the feudal system that used to live here, and it was more that based. But then again, look at the Walmarts or whatever. They're still family businesses. So I guess maybe there is no difference, really. And that just goes to show it. But hey, you know, the worst part of all of this is going to be in 20 years, there's going to be a bunch of articles from a bunch of statists going, look, the Fukushima accident was such a great thing because now look at all the technologies that were invented and subsidized by the state in order to help, you know, clean up what happened there. It's just, it's just a horrible situation in so many different ways.
Absolutely, and there is a guy by the name of Ian Goddard who does really quite good and thoroughly well researched videos from time to time about the Fukushima ongoing crisis that's happening there. So we'll throw that in the show notes for everyone to check into as well, James. Just quickly before we wrap up today, I just wanted to give a big shout out to my man Nick, who's been helping me keep APPerspective.net ticking over while I'm very, very busy doing other things, like most notably creating, rendering, and uploading new and classic interviews and podcasts for Corbett Report Extras, which is your new YouTube channel that you launched last week, I believe. And if you're new to the Corbett Report or just want to rewatch some of the best work that you've done over the years, James, I would highly recommend that people check it out. I'm really excited to get to work our way back to the Requiem of the Suicided series. I mean, I remember those really standing out for me back in the day. So,
excellent. Yeah, well, and let me put a plug in for the work that you're doing. You're doing an excellent job of visualizing some of this old material. So I hope people will take a look at it. And I will try featuring that material on the front page of CorbettReport.com regularly. So please check in every day and see what the new video is.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that absolute ton of information and headlines there for people to sink their teeth into and to hopefully gain a bit of a better understanding of what's happening here in the Asia Pacific region. James, as always, it's a hot area that doesn't get talked about enough. So let's do it again next month.
Looking forward to it. Talk to you later.